Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
You know, Big Daddy Kane once said it ain't easy being a pimp, but it turns out that pimp probably didn't work in Seattle, because apparently it is kind of easy being a pimp, at least an ex-pimp. There were so many people who sent me a note asking if it was true that a former pimp was hired by the city of Seattle, the same city that just yesterday, less than 24 hours ago, overturned a veto and moved forward with defunding the police, which means 100 cops will be fired. That same city hired a former pimp to the tune of a contract of $150,000. Now, here's where it gets kind of juicy. This happened back in June, and only recently was it released. Only recently was this information released. The city contracted with Andre Taylor, former pimp. I believe his pimp name was Gorgeous Dre back in 2000 in Las Vegas. He's the brother of Che Taylor, the felon, the rapist who tried to kill cops. He's become an outspoken activist, and he's been rewarded with a contract for $150,000 to offer, quote, expertise and support services in de-escalation, community engagement, and alternatives to policing. Now, the timing of this is very, very, very suspicious. You'll recall at the time of CHOP that Andre Taylor, towards the end, was doing some of the work, the activism that Mayor Jenny Durkan wanted him to do. He was calling for an end to the occupied zone. And he was, and kudos to him for doing that. He called out the violence that was taking place and said this could essentially not become what you want it to become because of all the violence. Apparently, there is some secretly recorded video of him working with some of the folks on the ground trying to leverage the CHOP situation, trying to negotiate with the activists who overtook the city, saying, hey, if you give up on CHOP, we'll get millions of dollars coming into the community. I'll work with the city. Now, the Daily Mail is calling that bribery. I don't know if I would use that term, although it's just as serious. Because most likely what would end up happening is that the money would be funded, again, into nebulously defined community programs, of which he is in charge of at least one. Not this time. That's the name of his nonprofit. So my assumption is what he was thinking was, hey, I'm going to broker this deal, and the money, it'll be funneled through my organization, and I'll dictate where the money actually goes. Now, of course, it was a total failure, this negotiation, because the people didn't leave. In fact, they ended up killing someone shortly after the negotiations took place. However, good for the former pimp, because Andre Taylor, on June 22nd, he ended up getting this contract. Again, a contract to offer expertise and support services in de-escalation, community engagement, and alternatives to policing. You know, when I say I suspect that part of it was to try to funnel money into his own community service group, I'm looking at this contract right now. I have it in my hand. It says the option for not this time to direct funds from this contract to other community organizations supporting the black community for services to be determined in consultation with the Department of Neighborhoods. They actually ended up giving him probably what he thought he was going to get, just not the same amount of money. That's what's so shocking about this. And by the way, as he's been doing this since late June, has the situation in Capitol Hill with the violence, did it get better or worse since then? Because Cal Anderson Park has been the site of several riots / mobs against the East Precinct. Just last week, there was a murder there. Turns out he's not really doing a good job, but the city of Seattle says, oh, you know, he's got expertise as someone who used to be a criminal. He brings to the table some street cred so he can talk to some of the gangbangers out there. Really? Because they might see him as a sellout, and I don't think that's going to help. Now, we spoke to Como TV about his title. His title is Street Czar. when the world is a street czar.
I know the term street czar is quite provocative. So a street czar is a person that has a particular genius in a particular area. Me as a black man have the right to be paid for my genius or for whatever my organization can provide. Black people as a whole have not been in a place to be compensated for their genius or their work for a very, very long time.
You know who comes to mind when I hear the way he's talking about himself?
Who's that?
Kanye West. Do you hear it too?
I hear it. Now that you just said that, that's good.
The genius of my music. He talks about the genius of what I do on the streets.
So are we going to get an Andre Taylor for mayor run at some point?
Maybe. Maybe he should just run now because Mayor Durkin's going to get recalled. His genius. So this is a guy who was once a pimp, who served a little more than a year of a five-year sentence in jail out in Las Vegas. He appeared in the 2000 documentary, American Pimp, for those of you who are looking for some good Netflix fun this weekend. Now, since then, he has become this activist. He formed this organization called Not This Time, and he's been very active in pursuit of what I would call anti-cop policies. He is the big reason why we changed the standard that you have to prove in court to go after an officer who uses force, deadly force. They lowered the bar because of his initiative. So what does a street czar actually do? What does your day look like?
Having sit-downs with gang members where they won't sit down with anybody else, and pimps and prostitutes.
Is it, what do you do? Like, are you sharing stories of crimes past?
Maybe he's still working as a pimp. He's an active pimp, maybe.
No, I think he's moved on from there. I think he's moved on. To be fair, I think he has moved on from that. I'm assuming so. I'm hoping they did some vetting. But this whole idea is, no, I'm just hanging out with my buddies.
Just that's talking shop.
Doing? That's what you're doing? And he notes, look, there is a lot of controversy needlessly here because I've done work with the city in the past.
No one raised any questions about the $100,000 that the city gave us for conversations with the streets. And we are kind of bewildered that people are now raising an issue about $150,000 for our de-escalation efforts that we've been doing since my brother Shay Taylor was killed. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me. It's a non-starter and a non-issue.
I don't know if it's a non-issue, and I'm certain it's not a non-starter because we've started talking about it. And the fact of the matter is, the reason why people probably didn't pay a lot of anger towards the past contracts, they probably didn't know. We didn't know about this until just four days ago. That's when we learned it. And I just asked the Department of Neighborhoods, like, why was this just published? Why was this contract just now published? Why didn't we get a press release on this before? And so when I get that answer, I'll certainly bring it to you. But there are some questions that I do think the city has to answer. Was anyone else considered for this job, or just the guy who was the ally of Mayor Jenny Durkin during the CHOP fiasco? Because it sure seems like he's getting rewarded for becoming her kind of spokesperson or emissary. A failed one, by the way, within CHOP. Why was he... What are his qualifications?
His genius.
What does he know? What is his genius on de-escalation? Because again, he didn't de-escalate the situation at CHOP, it got worse. I haven't seen any de-escalation. Has he been at any of these Antifa rallies / mobs / riots? Has he been there? I want you to think about it this way. Consider how much of a slap in the face this is from a city that just declared that they are going to move forward with defunding the police, firing up to 100 officers, hiring a former pimp to look at alternatives to policing. This is a city where the only people who seem to be protected and rewarded are criminals, former and current. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. When we come back, we're going to dive into the latest guidance coming from the CDC on whether or not you can enjoy Halloween. Here's a hint. You will not be enjoying Halloween. Here's an observation. I've never enjoyed Halloween, so I don't care all that much, but I will pretend for the sake of the children. The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington State, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. Don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Your health.
So the CDC just essentially killed Halloween. Boo. Say the kids who thought they could get away with dressing up in a mask that presumably would protect them from the coronavirus, especially given that children are in that demographic that are the least impacted by the coronavirus. The CDC just put out some guidance, three categories of which they go through different things that you can do during the Halloween season that potentially could spread the coronavirus. They've got the low, the moderate, and the high risk activities as it relates to spreading. Now, in the high risk categories, everything that kids and some adults who act like children want to do during Halloween. Trick or treating apparently is a high risk event for spreading the coronavirus, which to me makes no sense whatsoever. I don't need to charge $150,000 to be a consultant. I will give you a deal at $149.99.
That's a great price.
Why not just tell whoever's handing out the candy? Because what you want to do is not hold hands, right? You don't want to touch hands. Use tongs to pick up the mini Snickers and put it in the kid's bag.
Or just be the cool house and dump it into the bag straight from the bowl.
Well, no, because then the fat kids go there and then they take all the candy for themselves.
And
I'm
out
not
of
a fan of that.
Then you're out of candy at an early part of the night and you can stop answering the door.
No, that's not how it works. You know it's not how it works. I don't understand why you can't just take some tongs and you're not touching the candy ever. You're touching the tongs. Be responsible. Wash your hands and all that. The kids are going to be fine. They also say you can't go to haunted houses, which you can't socially distance in a haunted house. So let's say you've got a haunted house and normally it would just be a long line of people. Just treat it like a grocery store or a restaurant. Say we're going to hit it at capacity. We're only going to allow X amount of people into the home at the same time. And set up the little sanitation stations, and instead of just Purell, like, you get the Purell to be bloody red, and it'll be kind of fun.
What if the haunted house, instead of, like, you know, mummies and zombies, is full of different viruses?
That's
like,
kind of good.
Ah, there's COVID.
Dr. Fauci is a zombie.
Ah, there's the common flu.
I said I was going to dress up as COVID, the virus. I thought that was going to be a cool idea. They say you can't do hay rides, which that's fine with me. It's itchy. And then you can't do indoor parties, which we already knew because you can't do indoor parties right now. The moderate risk of spreading the coronavirus includes pumpkin patch visits, which all in pumpkin patch visits are so annoying and boring. I don't understand them. But if you can't go trick-or-treating in which you might touch a piece of candy that someone with COVID touched, why is it that you can go and touch a pumpkin that someone with COVID who's asymptomatic might have touched?
I mean, maybe you should treat it like the grocery store. Like, I feel like since COVID happened at the grocery store, I'm not going through there and picking up every tomato that I see to get the right one. I'm observing before and then touching when I want my tomato. And let's just, you know, make sure everyone starts doing that, whether it's the pumpkin patch, whether it's the produce section. Just touch the one that you're going to buy.
Okay, fine. I'll send Dr. Redfield a note.
Thank you.
They also say, for moderate, outdoor costume parades. Again, that doesn't make any sense. First of all, you shouldn't do an outdoor costume parade. But, you know, if it's like little kids who are doing it, you can socially a parade is just a march, right?
Yeah. Like a protest.
So just dress up as a cop killer. And then you can say that it's a peaceful protest.
Yeah,
how
wait, is woke Halloween
okay.
still allowed? Because that seems to be the trend that we have here, is woke things are allowed, but non-woke things aren't. So what if we just do a super woke Halloween?
Again, I'm all in.
If I dress up?
Dress up as a peaceful protester, and you're going to be able to go door to door.
If I dress up like AOC, do they, like, pay me? Do Democrats pay me for that?
That would be the scariest costume I've ever seen. And then for low risk of spreading the coronavirus, carving pumpkins alone Or I suppose with your family, so that's just sad. Movie night, presumably alone, which might be scary, but also sad. And a virtual costume contest, which is the saddest thing I've ever heard. You're dressing up and you're standing in front of a web camera, I guess. You're hopping on like Skype or Zoom. That's so sad.
It's going to take 5 minutes after doing your costume for like 2 hours, getting all the makeup
right.
What
are you supposed to do with that? You don't even get... So not normally, you know, the little girl who dresses up as a ballerina or whatever. Oh, you're so adorable. Here's a Butterfinger. I don't like Butterfinger. Give me the Reese's. And then, okay, here's the Reese's. You don't even get that.
Now it's like, hey, we'll mail you a gift card. And then you never get the gift card in the mail, and you're like, why did I waste my time on this Zoom call?
Yeah, and by the way, all at the same time that Senator Lamar Alexander asked this of Robert Redfield, the director of the CDC.
So just so I understand, you're saying that based on the preliminary indications from your serological testing and studies, that as many as 90% of Americans are still haven't had the virus yet?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we're just doubling down on how few people actually got this. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So this is going to be a big story later on tonight and into tomorrow, not based on what happened today, but what will happen because of a grand jury in Jefferson County, Kentucky, choosing to charge a former police detective with the Louisville PD, Brett Hankison. They charge him with 3 counts of wanton endangerment in the first degree as it connects to the shooting death of Breonna Taylor. You have a lot of folks, activists saying, say her name. They're responding. They're talking about Breonna Taylor. He was one of the officers that went into the home on March 13th. He ended up getting fired by the department back in June because of his conduct, which included shooting 10 times into the apartment in a wanton way. Now, the other officers in this face no charges, but as you can tell, even Hankison is not being charged with her death. The Attorney General of Kentucky, Daniel Cameron, a standout star from the RNC convention, he held a press conference today to talk about how they didn't just break into the home and start shooting. That's not what actually happened.
Evidence shows that officers both knocked and announced their presence at the apartment. The officer's statements about their announcement are corroborated by an independent witness who was near in a proximity to apartment 4. In other words, the warrant was not served as a no-knock warrant.
That's an important detail as folks are calling for the end of no-knock warrant searches. That's an incredibly important detail.
After breaching the door, Sergeant Mattingly was the first and only officer to enter the residence. Sergeant Mattingly identified 2 individuals standing beside one another at the end of the hall, a male and a female. In his statement, he says that the male was holding a gun, arms extended, in a shooting stance.
In fact, according to the evidence, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend was the one who shot first.
Sergeant Mattingly saw the man's gun fire, heard a boom, and immediately knew he was shot as a result of feeling heat in his upper thigh.
Now, of course, when we're talking about Hankison, he just started shooting. And he put people's lives at risk, meaning the neighbors. We don't know how people are going to react to this tonight beyond they are upset. We suspect what's going to happen in Louisville tonight is a lot of violence because we've already seen some of the violence. Not a lot, but we've already seen today attacks on police officers, some vandalism, and as of 10 minutes ago, there was a small fire being set in the streets, but it's still light outside. There's a curfew in place. There's the potential of the National Guard getting involved, but we knew from the start that the only acceptable finding here would be charges of murder against these cops, which anyone who paid even a little bit of attention to what actually happened knew was not going to come. But when you don't get your way in the activist community, the ones who are willing to act out violently, guess what? They're going to do exactly that. And they're going to use this as an excuse. So tonight's going to be very, very, very tense in the city of Louisville. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into the big local.
Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, because the media is already hyper-focused on Seattle. And instead, we focus our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Spanaway, where Cairo 7 TV says a 78-year-old woman held an intruder at gunpoint after fighting and breaking into her house. Her name is Sandy.
I opened my door, and standing right 2 feet from me was a man, and we looked at each other for a few minutes, and he turned and started to leave.
Just for a few minutes? You stared at a weird dude, and he stared back for a few minutes?
You don't stare at everybody for a few minutes before you say a single word?
Maybe when you get to be 78 years old, time is a little bit more relative.
And I said, oh, no, you don't. You stay right there. And I reached over and got my shotgun, and I cocked it.
Yeah.
And I told him to stay right there because he was going to turn and walk away. Told him to go out, sit on the steps. I followed him out. And when he got to the bottom step, I told him to sit down. And I just stood here with the shotgun waiting for the police to come.
Here's the sad part about the story. It turns out he was just the mailman. He was in his uniform and everything. He had packages in his hands.
You hate it. You hate to see it.
I'm kidding. Apparently, this neighborhood has been dealing with a lot of crime in the last several weeks. And so she's probably thinking about that as this crazy dude she doesn't recognize was found in the house. So she kept her cool. She was level-headed, and she held that gun on him.
I was totally calm, really and truly. I thought, this is amazing. I said, you know, I've got grandchildren your age.
But apparently, she asked a question as to why he was breaking in, and he was open and honest.
He said, well, you know, I was really hoping to get laid. That perked my ears up. That made me think, oh my God.
That's the difference between Sandy and I. Because I don't have a dating life. I'm like, oh my.
You think Sandy does?
That is kind of alarming. And is that a threat of rape?
I was wondering the same exact thing.
Right?
I couldn't tell.
Unless she runs a brothel, that is a truly alarming statement. And that means it's not just your intruder who we all would assume is just there to try to steal a TV or something or jewelry. That's so creepy. So obviously, kudos to her for keeping her cool, not pulling the trigger, being able to hold that heavy shotgun at him until Pierce County deputies arrived. And obviously, he was arrested, and, you know, she's going to move on with her life, obviously alarmed that this had happened and probably not feeling as safe as she otherwise would. But again, we bring up stories like this because usually you don't get the good person who protected themselves with a gun story. Usually the media is hyper-focused on the stories in which a gun accident happens. Or a story in which you can point to a gun being used and say, see, guns are dangerous. Well, in this case, yet again, because we did that story last week, this gun arguably saved her life. And saved someone from being potentially a victim of rape. Or worse. So kudos to Sandy for that. Because not a lot of people would have done that. Now let's head on over to Kennewick, where a student at Southridge High School said his teacher kicked him off a Zoom online class because in the back wall stood in his home a Trump flag. This kid displayed it proudly on his bedroom wall. It was in the back while the class was taking place, and this teacher kicked him out of the class. And we don't know what's going to happen to the kid. Now, normally, just telling you that probably outraged some people. Especially since we have schools all across the state that in their virtual classrooms say Black Lives Matter. This is a little bit different than that. It wasn't just a Trump 2020 flag. It also said no more BS, except it was spelled out. That changes the story a little bit. You're not supposed to have vulgar language being displayed in your classroom. The same way if you wore this t-shirt that said, Joe Biden, no more bull blank. You can't just wear that into a class. So you're not going to be able to put it on your wall. Now, the parents of the student spoke to KEPR television. They wanted to remain anonymous. And the story says the parents said they understand that there is profanity on the flag. However, they believe their child should be allowed to hang the flag in their own bedroom. You can, just don't have the webcam on it. I totally understand if this was just a Trump flag and they kicked him out of the room. Then the student is 100% correct. But you can't have the vulgarity there. The same way that you can't have pornography in the background. Unless, of course, it's a Zoom bomb and someone jumps onto the class and then shows hardcore pornography, which we talked about it.
Then it's free game.
Then that's fine. And the teacher will kick you out. But, I mean, you can't have that in the background. This is not the story that I think some people want it to be. It really isn't. Now, I suppose they're trying to make a nuanced argument, which is the school can't censor, which is the argument essentially here by kicking someone out of the class. School can't censor protected speech when it's in your home. And really, you can't censor protected speech on campus either. There are some examples where you can get involved. And generally speaking, when it causes some kind of disruption, if it's a reasonable concern that it could cause disruption, or in case like this kind of vulgarity, you can actually intervene. And so the argument I'm supposing coming from the school is going to be extended, in this case, to the classroom being in the kid's bedroom. The kid should not have the vulgar flag. It's really that simple. And if people can't understand that, dare I say, you're being a little too hypersensitive. You're allowing your own bias to show. Because the school, unless you're telling me, wouldn't do the same for Joe Biden, and you have an example of that, I think the school would treat it exactly the same way. Now, hopefully, the student will be allowed back into the classroom, and there's not going to be any issue outside of this. Kid made a mistake. If they want to die in a hill on this, you can go ahead, but I don't think this one's going to go in their favor. That's my take. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770. We're going to dive into another case of political speech, where a city commissioner is all like, you can't do this on your lawn. You cannot take that political position. Oh, really? We're going to dive into that and so much more. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app. You know, this is a pretty absurd story out of Mason, Michigan, on the topic of politics and the upcoming election, where in this case, someone on his front lawn decided to make a political statement. This guy decided to put a toilet on his lawn next to a sign that says, place mail-in ballots here. Now, this is clearly political speech. He's clearly taking a position that he does not trust. He does not have faith in mail-in balloting. Now, you can disagree with him. That's cool. I happen to disagree with him in a sense, maybe not in Michigan, but in Washington, I certainly have faith, generally speaking, in the mail-in ballots. Michigan, due to some maneuvering by the Democrats there, calls into question whether or not it's going to be as secure and as effective as you would hope. And so this individual homeowner decided to make a point, but the Democratic clerk of Ingham County, where he lives, decided to file a complaint with the police saying it could possibly mislead people who are not familiar with how mail-in voting works. If you think that mail-in voting works by putting a ballot in a toilet on someone's lawn, you should probably rethink whether or not you are going to participate in any election. Of all the people who might be disenfranchised, as much as we would prefer that not happen, if it happens to the individual who thinks putting a ballot in a toilet is the way to vote, I guess I'm saying, well, I'd prefer no one get disenfranchised. I'm not going to be all that upset. Now, of course, no reasonable person thinks that this is going to lead to some person accidentally voting via a toilet. But Barb Byram, this dumb Democratic clerk of Ingham County, she is quoted as saying, "It is a felony to take illegal possession of an absentee ballot. Elections in this country are to be taken seriously, and there are many people who are voting by mail for the first time this election." If anyone who you've provided some sort of outreach to as you're trying to get them to vote for Joe Biden or whomever is running locally in that county, again, if they end up having any point of contact with you or any of the messages you put out on social media and their takeaway is, oh, I can literally just put a mail-in ballot in a toilet, you're not doing your job. Imagine being open about taking this position. Imagine actually putting your name to a story and a quote about complaining that some clearly political speech is going to be taken seriously. Imagine putting your name proudly there. We have reached full parity, at least in Mason, Michigan. Now, since we're talking about the election, let's dive into some of the latest. Obviously, the president is moving forward with replacing Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The announcement's going to happen on Saturday at 2 o'clock later that afternoon slash evening. He will be doing a campaign speech. I'm assuming that rally will be heavily focused on whomever it is he's going to pick. Later on today, we're going to chat with the CEO and founder of the Article 3 Project about who he thinks is going to be the nominee coming from the White House. But it doesn't matter because at this point, Joe Biden says it is clearly an abuse of power. That somehow what they want to do is some kind of violation.
What's going to happen is women's rights as it relates to everything from medical health care is going to be gone. We're going to find that the Affordable Care Act, you should be out there campaigning. What's going to happen? Women will be able to be charged more than men for the same procedures again. Pregnancy, the pre-existing condition again. We got to stop it. We should go to the American people and make the case why this is a gigantic mistake and abuse of power.
So it very clearly is not an abuse of power, right? This is constitutional. He has the you could disagree with the tactic on the left. Go ahead, disagree all you want. Again, I understand why someone on the left would be upset with this. Someone on the right would have been upset if Merrick Garland replaced Antonin Scalia. But to call it an abuse of power indicates that he thinks you guys are not all that bright, that you're going to fall for it. You can make the argument that it's hypocritical. If you do it right, I think that's a winning argument, or it can be. It's at least something that people can understand. But an abuse of power, it is not. And they know it's not. In fact, they know it's not because they wanted Merrick Garland to be put on the court. Was that an abuse of power? Should they have waited? No, they took the position then that they didn't have to wait because, yet again, it was constitutional, as was denying it. So it's absolutely absurd. Now, the rest of this stuff, he should be relishing. Of course, everything he just said there in what would inevitably happen is all speculation. It's complete speculation. He has no idea. He's making an assumption. Now, maybe some of it is right. Maybe some of it is wrong. Maybe all is right. Maybe all is wrong. But if all is right, and that's really what this is, well, then why don't you talk about this abuse, in your view, nonstop, and use it to campaign against the president in a more vigorous way? This then would help you. All you have to do is say, hey, because they're putting this person on the Supreme Court, all of you guys, you're going to lose your health care. Women are going to be set back decades. Vote for me and I will undo it. Vote for me and I'm all in. I'm going to fix it. Just turn it into that. But he's not going to. He doesn't want to talk about this. He wants to talk about the coronavirus. That's what he wants to talk about. And so now he's in a really tricky position, including, by the way, Kamala Harris, who's in a tricky position because this is going to take her off of the campaign trail, even in this post-COVID world, or this, we shouldn't say post, we're in the middle of it. She's already not doing everything that she can be, but this would, of course, bring her back to the Senate, where I suppose she could shine. She can be put in a position where she goes after this candidate in a difficult way. But if she goes after whoever the female nominee is, the way she went after Brett Kavanaugh, that's not going to be a good look. Now, Chuck Schumer announced he's going to do everything possible to delay this replacement. I don't know what he can actually do.
We have tactical options to slow them down. We will use every tool in the toolkit. Now, admittedly, McConnell has changed the rules, so we have fewer tools and they're less sharp. But every tool we have, we will use.
What tool do you have? You don't have tools. Well, I should rephrase that. See what I did there, Peyton? See what I did there? They don't have any tools here. They don't have the 50 votes. They needed 50 votes. Republicans have it. They can move forward. And they will.
Today, we delayed committees going into effect. We had the right to do that, and we did it. Tonight, we're on the floor, taking up all the time on the floor to talk about how bad this potential nominee. And there will be many other things that we can use. You'll see them in the days ahead.
Could you give us a little bit of a preview? Because I am skeptical that you have anything. I don't think you have any tools. Take that! I called you a liar! And I don't think that there's an appetite for this anyway. By the way, you drag this out longer than it has to be. Not only does it hurt the chances in the Senate for Democrats to take over, because all you're doing is putting a giant spotlight on how extreme the left is, and that obviously helps Tom Tillis, Joni Ernst, Martha McSally, all senators who are Republicans who are trailing right now or very close in the polling. All you're doing is helping, because the reason why conservatives and independents end up putting people in power, one of the leading drivers, is the Supreme Court. Again, we learned that back in 2016. That's why so many people ended up going with Donald Trump. They held their nose because they didn't like his conduct. They didn't like his personality. They didn't like his tweets. But they understood, hey, we have the opportunity to at least save a moderate Republican, or maybe just sort of a down-the-middle independent jurist, with a common-sense conservative. And they took it. What do you think they're going to do now if all of a sudden you seem even more recalcitrant? You're not going to be rewarded for that. You're listening to The Jason Rance Show. I really do appreciate it. Don't forget, I'm going to be on Tucker Carlson later tonight. I will have the video available at twitter.com/JasonRance. We got a whole lot more of the show coming up when we return right here on KTTH.